Epilogue. A few days later, they sat in the Archvoyant's palace, in the big room with a lot of chairs and couches and cushions, and, most importantly, drinks. Tern sat in front of the now constantly glimmering Hessler, either leaning against him or possibly holding him in place. Desidora sat at the bar next to Kale, helping him serve drinks with his one functional arm, while Icy sat on a cushion on the floor with Princess Veiled Lightning beside him, her sparkly braids dangling by her face. Ululenia, human this time, shared a couch with Dairy and Mr. Dragon, who were holding hands. Locke sat on a little love seat with Pyvik beside her. They weren't holding hands, but they were touching shoulders and kind of leaning against each other in comfortable exhaustion. There were two Archvoyants at the front of the room. Savart, walking with the aid of a stick that probably didn't have a hidden blade inside it, had limped over to Bertram, whose face still looked haggard, but who was at least awake again and talking.
"We'll be sharing power for the time being," Savart said. "There's a lot of rebuilding to do."
"I know much of..."
Bertram paused, frowned, and shook his head.
"I remember much of what the ancients did. I'll be working to root out any left in this world."
"And as the wildfire yields room for new shoots of green," Ululenia added, "you'll be discussing how to make reparations to the kobolds for the wrongs done to them."
"Yes, of course," Savart said.
And then, when Ululenia did not break eye contact, he added,
"You have my word. No more mining until we have an agreement with the kobolds that lets us extract the crystals that power this nation, and that sets right the wrongs done to the kobolds."
Ululenia nodded, smiling brightly, and took a sip of spring water.
"See, that was just a look, but I'm still not getting entirely not evil from her," Tern said.
Ululenia waved lazily. "The butterfly cannot return to the cocoon, but it can dazzle the world with its new wings. Look in your hand."
"I don't have anything in my..."
Tern held up her hand, which now held a fresh apple on a naturally grown stick.
"This should be covered with chocolate," she muttered,
and then Hessler patted her arm, and she leaned back against him.
"The bigger problem will be rebuilding people's trust," Bertram said, "after everything we did under their control." "We have all done things we regret," Icy said.
"And punishing yourselves will not help," Veiled Lightning said, looking at Bertram and then at Icy.
"Speaking of which," Locke said,
"Jell."
"Dead," Hessler said.
Locke had a hard time seeing his face clearly behind the glow, but she thought he was doing his normal, thoughtful squint.
"The damage from the paladins, compounded with Mr. Dragon's fire, was enough to completely destroy the part of the demonic hole that retained her memories. It's interesting, with my new abilities, I may be able to explore the plane where the demons exist more."
"What did we say about trying out new glimmering Hessler powers?"
Tern asked, without looking around.
"But we weren't going to," Hessler said with a little sigh.
"There we go."
"We've lost enough already," Desidora said, and lifted her wine glass.
"To Gil?"
Ululenia raised her cup of spring water.
"And Captain Thelenia."
"Derenki," Pyvik added.
"Naria."
Severt's voice was soft, and he looked down even as he raised his own glass.
"I'm not doing Jell," Kale said to Locke. "We do Jell. We might as well do those fish in your family garden that Diz turned into zombies."
"To my family's fish," Locke said gravely, and everyone drank.
"I'll need people to go through every inch of Heaven's Spire," Savart said, "and make sure that there are no more little surprises from the ancients waiting for us. Tern, Hessler, if you're willing."
"I can help," Desidora said, refilling her wine glass. "The Death Priestess powers are packed safely away again, but I can read auras others might miss."
"And I'll stand helpfully nearby," Kale added.
"Actually," Savart said, "I spoke with the puppeteers you rescued, and we had some ideas about taking the puppet shows in new directions. They asked about you specifically, helping to coordinate some of them."
"Really?"
Kale thought about it.
"All right. Soon as Diz and I get back from seeing my mother, I'm in."
Desidora coughed.
"What?"
"No, Diz, it's good. You'll like her."
Kale smiled.
"She's a little crazy sometimes, but, well, she's got a lot of love to give."
Desidora choked on her wine.
"The people of the Elflands look forward to helping you recover," Mr. Dragon said.
Our nature magic may help fill in the gaps as you try to cut back on your use of crystals. We'd be honoured to form a closer friendship with your people, Bertram said, and with a ghost of a smile added. And if you were open to formal relations, Savert had an idea for ambassador.
Derry put his other hand over the hand that was linked with Mr. Dragon's.
I'm staying with him.
That was the plan, young Rivendaris, Savert said dryly. Now, as for the Empire.
It would do no one any good to fall into our usual hostilities now, Veiled Lightning said, from where she knelt on the floor. Truly, as a forest when the rain has doused the flames of the forest fire, Ululenia said. This is the time for healing and new growth. She scooted over on the couch and gave Veiled Lightning a warm smile. Are you certain you're comfortable down there, Princess? There is plenty of room beside me.
I guess growing up with a bodyguard with a giant axe, Tern said. You never had a chance to...
She blinked as Veiled Lightning, Icy and Ululenia all looked at her.
See the natural beauty of the Republic, she finished. It's funny, because as I recall from the biography that came with your 1-6 scale doll, you liked rare flowers, and Ululenia is an expert on flowers, and I thought maybe she could take you on a tour of the Archvoyant's garden later, for diplomatic peace-building.
She bit into her apple rather than talk any more.
That sounds lovely, Veiled Lightning said, smiling shyly as she took the hand Ululenia offered to help her up.
It is the perfect time of year to watch the petals open, Ululenia assured Veiled Lightning as the princess settled down beside her. Ululenia's movements to ensure that the princess had enough room made her clingy white dress show a lot of very pretty leg.
Tomorrow afternoon I am to meet Tarn and Hessler for drinks, Icy added to Veiled Lightning, who was blushing a little as she looked at Ululenia.
Perhaps you and Ululenia could join us. I believe Tarn had questions about your hair.
Yes, Tarn said, wide-eyed, and then, yes, that would be lovely. We would certainly enjoy the company.
As Veiled Lightning looked at Ululenia's smooth and ostensibly innocent leg, Tarn shot Icy a thumbs up. Locke sat back and watched it all, entirely content to lean against Pyvik. Eventually, the talk turned to more drinking, and then people began to leave, Ululenia and Veiled Lightning off to the garden, Derry and Mr. Dragon to the Elflands, Tarn and Hessler to their new apartment by the Lapa Temporum, convenient both for work and for the regular checkups Hessler would be getting, to make certain that he wasn't dangerous to himself or others, Icy to the new Imperial Embassy, and Kale and Isadora to wherever Kale's mother lived. Pyvik and Locke left last, saying their goodbyes to Savert and Bertram.
You found work for them all this time, Locke said to Savert.
Of course I did.
He raised an eyebrow at her.
Look at what happened when I left them to their own devices.
They saved the Republic.
3 times, added Pyvik. And their reward is, once again, not being arrested for everything they did, and having a seat at the cabinet meetings as we figure out how to put this mess back together.
Savert smiled sadly.
Issa, about what happened?
It wasn't you, Yeshki, Locke said. It wasn't Pyvik fighting Desidora, and it wasn't you fighting Narya.
Yeshki, he muttered, and wiped at his eyes. I get a cane, and suddenly you think I'm an old man.
Locke hugged him, shook hands with Bertram, and headed out.
How are you, Baroness? Pyvik asked beside her, as they walked along the false stone streets of Heaven's Spire.
Locke smiled tightly. She was a Baroness now. She thought of Narya sitting on the throne and laughing, and then she thought of Narya lying dead in the 2 green grass. Narya, who finally didn't run away. There were snide remarks and cutting words in the past, and now no future. And Locke damned the ancients to hell for that.
I should have made things right with her. She died saving you, Pyvik said,
without looking over, his Justicar's boots clicking on the street.
That's about as right as you can get.
That wasn't my sister, Locke said. That was Archvoyant Silliston's first blade, turning invisible and dancing around with an assassin's knife. Pyvik laughed, and Locke looked over. At her look, he shook his head.
The two of you thought she was so different just because she liked dresses and you liked swords. You think that's why you didn't get along?
We didn't get along because she became an assassin for the man who killed our parents.
You both looked at a world rigged against you and figured out which rules to bend and which rules to break.
Different strengths, different choices, but the same determination.
Pyvik smiled.
Your parents would have been proud of both of you. And angry at both of you.
Locke smiled back, then wiped her stinging eyes.
You know the worst part? She was a damn good baroness.
Pyvik took Locke's shoulders and pulled her in for a quick hug.
You'll be a good one as well.
I suppose we'll find out, she pulled out of the hug.
You don't have to take the title if you don't want to, Pyvik pointed out. Let the land go free. The guilds would love it.
Lockenville needs me. Locke glared at his smile.
What? Just thinking that the little town around the manor is almost large enough to be considered a city.
Pyvik shrugged.
It could use a Justicar presence.
They need you up here, she said. You've got a fair amount of rebuilding to do, given what just happened to the whole country, and why are you still smiling?
They need me. Lockenville needs you.
Pyvik stopped her again, and his smile softened.
You remember that message I sent on the crystal during the battle?
Locke did not touch the message crystal that was still in her pocket and would stay there for the rest of her life.
Yeah? Desidora made me send it.
Locke shook her head. Desidora is a pain in the arse. Pyvik laughed.
You know how hard it was to tell you that I needed you?
You said you loved me, too.
Love is easy. Need, though.
He looked down, smiling tightly.
Need feels like weakness. Need means you're not all right without someone else, and what self-respecting scout is going to admit something like that? We can't even say that we miss each other.
He looked back up, meeting her gaze, still smiling and almost angry now.
Kind of messed up when you think about it. I wouldn't have said it if Desidora hadn't basically love-priestessed me into it. I hope it mattered.
Locke felt Gil's power in her hands again, for just a moment, on that alien world, ready to blast it all away in one great swing. This time, she looked away from Pyvik.
It mattered. It's all right to need people, Pyvik said,
and Locke stepped in and kissed him. It was a slow, gentle kiss, with none of the frantic urgency they'd had when they'd first reunited. Then, with a deep breath, she said, I can survive without you. I can go live in Lockenville where I'm needed, and leave you up on Heaven's Spire where you're needed. I don't need you. Pyvik didn't step away and didn't interrupt. He just nodded. She didn't step away either. But I like the world a lot more when you're here, she said, and her grip on him tightened. Pyvik smiled.
Please, Baroness, I'm blushing.
You know what I mean.
I only said it because Desidora hit me.
Locke shook her head, trying not to laugh, and then leaned in again and kissed him messily. Desidora isn't a scout, she said as they broke apart. She doesn't understand how we work. What I need is a solution that gets me everything I want and doesn't mess things up for the Republic.
That's kind of you.
What I have is a very fast airship, she said as they broke apart. How do you feel about flying to work?
Strongly in favor. Pyvik smiled. I'll have to leave early.
That's a shame, Locke said, because you'll be staying up late. They walked off arm in arm, not stuck together, but together nevertheless. We hope you have enjoyed our presentation of The Paladin Caper by Patrick Weeks, performed by Justine Eyre. Performance copyright 2015 by Brilliance Audio. All rights reserved. For further information concerning this program or other Brilliance Audio titles, please call the following toll-free number, 1-800-222-3225, or visit our website at www.brillianceaudio.com. No part of this recording may be played for an audience or reproduced in any form. It may not be streamed, downloaded, broadcast, or copied without written permission. Address all inquiries to Brilliance Audio, P.O. Box 887, Grand Haven, Michigan, 49417.